Scandinavians in the State House, How Nordic Immigrants Shaped Minnesota Politics is the new book from Klaas Bergman, and he's kind enough to join us today to talk about this book. Mr. Bergman, thank you very much for the time.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
I have to ask the question, looking at your biography, I'm trying to find how you got interested in Minnesota politics. You've got a heck of a resume here, working in media for many years, working in Washington, D.C. You've worked for World Bank, Yale, Stanford. You're in Los Angeles, I believe, right now. How did you get interested in Minnesota politics?
Well, really, it was as a boy growing up in Stockholm, Sweden. I at the time of the Vilhelm Moberg epic stories, novels about Kristina and Karl-Oskar in around Chisago Lake as the first Swedish immigrants. And his epic stories really sort of created this interest in immigration, which is still today, as an immigrant myself, a great interest of me. And combining that with politics, which is another big interest of mine. And I discovered that the story of the Scandinavians or Nordic immigrants in Minnesota, which of course was the epicenter for the Nordic immigration to the United States, their stories about how they got involved in politics, and particularly in Minnesota, is really a story that hasn't been told before. So I started working on this story, and that's how this book came about.
I like the story because there's an element of this book which goes well beyond just the Scandinavians. And it tells the story of how immigrant groups, whether it's the first Europeans that were coming over here in the 1600s, 1700s, to the Scandinavians, to the modern immigrants that are coming over in droves from new countries, how they integrate themselves into community. They become part of the community. They start winning local elections, start becoming local representatives, and gradually work their way up into larger and larger roles in politics. It's a story that has been copied many times in America across the board, and it is the story of what I would like to call kind of successful immigrant communities where they've been able to come in large droves and be able to bring themselves, keep their own heritage, but bring themselves and bring it into America as well.
Well, you're absolutely right. This is a truly American story. You know, you have before the breakthrough in Minnesota with the first Scandinavian governor, the Norwegian-born Knut Nelson, there were already, hundreds and maybe thousands of lower-level officials, Scandinavian immigrants, who had run for office on the county level or the township level. And then eventually they spread their wings and became statewide and eventually, of course, became nationwide representatives. And their story is an American story in the way how an ethnic group, and I now talk about the immigrants from the five Nordic countries, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, Finland, and Iceland, and how they came over and really became sort of a new political elite, a new political class in Minnesota, and were in leadership for decades, and until the last Scandinavian governor Arne Carlson in the 1990s. And the question now, of course, is: Will he be the last Scandinavian governor in Minnesota as Minnesota is changing?
It is. I doubt he will be. I'll go out on a limb on this. What's interesting, going back in the book and going back to the time, okay, one of the things about Minnesota, when 1858 it becomes a state, most of the state, a lot of the initial money leaders within the state were actually East Coast people that had moved out here, a lot of guys from Maine, a lot of guys from Massachusetts, some people from Ohio that had moved to the Minnesota to try to find their fortune, and many of them did. The thing which seems a little bit odd is, as you talk about Knut Nelson, he went to the U.S. House of Representatives in 1882. It seems like a long time. We have this idea that from the get-go, 1858, that the Scandinavians were basically all into the government, and it really does point out. Your book does show this is a fledgling immigrant community, and it took them quite a few decades to get the traction and start getting people within the positions of power.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But it's important here, since you mentioned the immigrants from eastern United States, the so-called Yankees,
yes,
that they found a bond, the Scandinavians, with the Yankees. They were pro-union, they were anti-slavery, and they were big supporters of education. So you have had three things here which they found in common ground with the Yankees. So they found they became, of course, Republicans also. They were strongly for the Union, and they became Republicans for almost half a century, basically, until they started moving into other political parties and political movements. So they found. So I think it's important to underline also here that the Scandinavians founded, created this bond with the Yankees, and eventually moved on beyond the Yankees. But that during the first sort of 1850s to the end of the 18th century, it was really a Yankee-Scandinavian coalition.
You talk about the stories that you read as a child as you were growing up out there in Sweden. And I guess the question was, when we started seeing the Scandinavian immigrants come into power, was that sort of, did that open the doors? It seems like that there might have been almost kind of a, hey, look, we're welcome here. We're part of the community. Get to Minnesota. Did immigration continue to forge forward with the knowledge that the Scandinavian leadership in the government here was actually, you know, once again, it was, you know, our guys are now taking control in Minnesota. So, you know, safe haven sort of thing.
Well, I don't think it was that much so, but it was really Minnesota as an opportunity for poor Scandinavian immigrants, A, to find land through the Homestead Act in 1862, but also to find later on work in the rapidly growing Minnesota economy. So you have two things there. You know, the early immigrants sent letters home and said, look, there's land, there's jobs here, you know, come on over. So it was more that factor than anything else. And you see that, of course, with the new waves of immigrants in Minnesota, the Somalis and the Hmong, you know, they came for work. And, of course, they were encouraged by the early comers that come here. We've been well received and we're eager to get going here. And there are jobs and there are opportunities. So let's come. And, of course, you see that later on with the Somalis, as I write in the book. From Snooze Boulevard to Little Mogadishu in that chapter, how the Somalis now have sort of copied the Scandinavian political handbook and become involved in local politics in Minneapolis.
And very successfully, and they are starting to become a very large force within the political elements, that's for sure. One of the things I found interesting, though, as you talked about the land, I remember, and I think I was at the Minnesota Historical Society, and I should mention Minnesota Historical Society Press puts this book out. I was there, and I can remember reading someone, a Scandinavian, who had made the comment. He says, well, I came here because the last time there was available land for sale in his town where he was from was 500 years ago. There was nothing there. And this,
yes.
this concept of land that you could clear, that you could work, or as you talked about laborers, and you talk about the laboring class quite a bit in the book, the laborers, the fact that we had these jobs with the Minnesota mills and the waterfall here in Minneapolis, starting with the lumber mills and moving into the flour industry, there was ample work. And I mean, it really was, once again, speaking of America and what it represented, the opportunity for advancement, the opportunity for the American dream was being presented there to the Scandinavian cultures.
Yeah, I think that those were the forces that played in here, rather than, you know, that Minnesota had a Scandinavian governor and things like that. But, you know, there was this closeness between Minnesota and the Scandinavian community back in Scandinavia. That sort of the relationship grew with, of course, the thousands and thousands that came over to Minnesota and settled here. But of course, you know, if you were a poor Norwegian or Swedish farmer and you went west out to the Red River Valley and you saw the land and the prairie and all that stuff, you know, you must have gone crazy with you know, let's just stay here and work the land, because they never seen anything like it back home.
Klaus Bergman joining us, Scandinavians in the State House. You have a chapter here where you talk about radicals in exile and how the Scandinavians, I mean, you mentioned they're Republicans, but they were not the modern Republicans. They were the Republicans of the 1800s, where in this love of country, and there was a real socialism vibe that was coming over with them, which really played a major role in the fight for labor here in the state of Minnesota.
Absolutely, you have it both among the Swedes and some of the Norwegians, but particularly among the Finns, who came, of course, to the Iron Range and became strike leaders and socialists, and even the leader, the longtime leader of the American Communist Party, came from Cherry, Minnesota, and was a Finnish immigrant family there. So Gus Hall. So you have lots of ties there. I would like to stress here, however, that some of these radicals were not really dying to come to America. They were what I would call reluctant immigrants. They were radicals in exile. They were forced, because of their political activities in Sweden and in Finland, to come to America to survive, to find jobs. And Minnesota, America and Minnesota did receive them. So in that sense, they became also strong proponents of their new country in many ways.
Well, and when presented with the labor strife, especially in the early part of the 20th century, they refound themselves. I mean, there seems to be an acceptance of, as you mentioned there, the acceptance of the American situation at that point, and they use their knowledge and their experience in fighting for better rights and better working conditions to help their American brethren, not just the Scandinavians, but all Minnesotans.
Absolutely, and it is sort of a remarkable story that here, particularly the Finns here, took on the leadership in many ways of this struggle. And although many of them spoke poor English, and they sort of were the front line of this fight, and helping, of course, their American working colleagues. So that's a really remarkable story to tell.
The Finns, as a matter of fact, you have a chapter about the Finns up on the range there, and it's interesting because my great-great-grandfather was one of the foremen in the mine up in Virginia, and McNeil, and they had basically, I mean, that was something which I don't think the mining companies up throughout the range were expecting such a strong, very pro-labor labor force to come up there, because it really kind of tempered. I think the difference between a lot of other places in the country in northern Minnesota and why Minnesota still today has got a very blue streak as far as politics goes up there is the fact that these people went up there, and yeah, these were company towns, and yes, this was hard labor and stuff like that, but they were not about to get pushed around.
Oh, no. They had suffered the civil war back in Finland, and they had the big strike in Stockholm, Sweden, in 1909, when people were blacklisted and basically could not find work anymore. So many of these were really hardened political activists, and they knew what they were doing when they came over to Minnesota, and they continued their political activities and started their newspapers and led, as I said before, the big strikes on the Iron Range in the early 1900s. So these were politically pretty savvy people. There's no question about it.
I will say this, as you said at the beginning of the interview, whether or not there's going to be another Scandinavian governor, I will say so, because we still have people today that try to get listed on ballots with kind of a Scandinavian theme to their name. So there still is today, even though we are a very multicultural state, especially Minneapolis, St. Paul, as far as a major metropolitan city, we still do have this love of the Scandinavian culture, which was some of the first immigrant class that came into the state.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And if like me, I'm visiting Minnesota a lot in the last 3 or 4 years as I wrote this book and researched this book, you're reminded of Scandinavia and the Nordic cultures all the time, wherever you travel around the state. So it is really part of the fabric of Minnesota. So I think in many ways, you will have new leadership and maybe new governors with Scandinavian surnames. But they'll be different than the first batch of them, because they will not have been born in the old countries, but they are sort of second and third generation immigrant families, and so they will be sort of Americanized Scandinavians. But I do believe that, and you know, a lot of the people I talk to for the book believe that that Minnesota is on this Scandinavian road. And will stay because it's so much part, it's so ingrained in the political culture of the state.
Klaus Bergman, once again, Scandinavians in the State House, How Nordic Immigrants Shaped Minnesota Politics. Not only a great book if your family's from Scandinavian countries or you're a fan of the Scandinavian culture, it's a great book just to understand how the immigrant culture comes in and becomes a driving political force. It's an excellent read. Klaus, thank you very much for the time. Great book. All my best. I'll make sure we link everything up online a little bit later on.
Hey, thank you so much for inviting me. I enjoyed it.
My pleasure. Klaus Bergman, once again, Scandinavians in the State House. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.